Blog Talk Radio.
Love.
That's good. That is real good for the soul right there. That's why they call it soul music. And I just want to say hello to all our friends around the world. What's happening, everybody? This is Wardell Potts Jr. for Solar Records Radio. And we appreciate you tuning in today, as this is indie jazz music on Solar Records Radio. And we really, really are being blessed today because we have an amazing man coming on today by the name of Rodney Mansfield, who you just heard sing that beautiful song. So without any further ado, let me go on and bring the brother in. Rodney, are you there?
Kind of something.
Hey. Are you there, Rodney? Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
What's happening, Ben? How you doing?
I'm good, Wardell. I want to start off by telling you how much I appreciate being with you on your program.
Oh, what a blessing. Thank you. And the feeling's mutual. I feel exactly the same having you on. But let me tell you something right now. I got to ask you this question. Where are you? Are you in Philadelphia?
No. Right now I'm in Blackwood, New Jersey.
Okay. Because every time, I know that when I talk to your manager, she's over in Jersey as well. And then something about you in Philly. And then I saw, like, on your music, it had a remix, a Philly mix on it. I'm like, why do you keep singing it? Because that's where I'm from. That's my home.
I was in Philly I just bought this house and went to settlement on it here in Blackwood June the 16th. So prior to that, I was in Philly.
Ah, okay. So you hang out. That's your turf a little bit. So you must eat a lot of cheesesteak hoagies, or you did.
I used to.
Yeah, as we get older, we got to back off, right?
Yeah, you learn, man. That everything that tastes good isn't good for you.
Ah, absolutely. Too much of anything is not good for you. And I know, you know, I've been away from it for so long, so I'm always chasing it, man. I'm always trying to get back over there. But it's all good, man. Listen, I'm so blessed because, man, your voice is absolutely amazing. And I want to talk to you about you and how you became you. Like, how did you discover this voice that God is giving you? When did it get going for you?
Let me say this, Wardell, I'm honored with what you're saying, but it was really, really kind of basic, right? My mother comes from a large family, mm-hmm. and they had the Jones girls and the Jones boys, singers, right?
Right, right.
And so it was just natural that music came about in my home. It's really kind of strange, though. I have two brothers and a sister. But the only one that really took up singing was me. So I started with the Philadelphia Boys Choir when I was 8 years old. I went from the boys choir to the city junior choir to the senior choir. But the woman that really helped put me on the map, the person that did that for me, was my choir director, Miss Ann Swain Clark, out of Vare Junior High School. And what happened?
Junior high school.
Junior high school. Junior high.
Okay.
And Swain Clark. Bear Junior High. And what happened was, I became a soloist for the glee club and the choir and all that stuff. And something really, really crazy happened, which led me to becoming a solo artist. Whenever the people in the glee club or the choir, when sections weren't learning the parts or were late for rehearsals, so forth and so on, Mrs. Clark would say to the whole auditorium, "I'll do the whole concert, just me and Rodney." And the first time she said that, man, she scared me to death. I was like, "Oh, I hope she's playing. She ain't really talking about me standing up here and singing by myself with all these people. I like, you know, being in this choir with all these people."
Right. Exactly.
She was the one that planted that seed that if need be, I could do something on my own and, you know, by myself. So I always mention Mrs. Ann Swain Clark. She's actually out of Chester. And, you know, she really, by we used to go do, we were the only junior high in the city. You remember Southern High School by any chance?
No. How do we, okay. Is this in Philly?
It's on Broad Street. It's on Broad and Snyder. It's still there. It's a high school.
Okay.
We were the only junior high school that toured high schools for performances.
Oh, wow.
And it was unheard of during that time, but that's how strong the Glee Club was.
Wow.
So it was kind of crazy because normally you would have the seniors and the juniors coming to the junior high schools, but no, it was totally the opposite. We went to the high schools to perform. And once, and you know, and the kids at the time would laugh at these little kids coming in to sing, but once we got in there and did what we did, they began to appreciate, you know, the strength of the Glee Club, but we had to attribute all of that to Mrs. Clark because she was a powerhouse.
Mm. Now, I went to Simon Gratz High School.
So oh, man, I got stories for Simon Gratz. Go ahead.
You got what? Girlfriend? What
I have
say?
A story for you for Simon Gratz.
Uh-oh. Good. All right, well, you go ahead.
No, I might tell you this one off the radio, man. We're talking
okay.
about the Simon Gratz story off the radio.
Okay,
go
okay,
ahead.
You cool,
went to Simon Gratz.
Cool. Yeah, well, no, I was just saying you when you mentioned the high school. So I did know about Edison. Isn't Edison down there where you were just talking about that other school? Isn't it Edison High School down there? And Franklin?
Sort of.
Okay.
It's north of, it's a good ways north of Southern. Frankfurt, okay. they were schools that are good ways north.
Okay. So now I'm going to get back to your story. So when the teacher had decided to make that statement to the class, did you talk to her about why she made that statement?
Never asked her a question. I knew that it was a threat. I knew, I'm sorry, Waddell, I knew it was a threat because the kids were acting up.
Ah.
So when she did it, I just sort of took it as a threat, but it, you know, it was empty. It was just something she was saying. But the more and more she pulled me out as a soloist, the more I started realizing that I could do something standing there at the mic by myself. And that was pretty much, she was the one that sort of brought me out of that, you know, into that world. But I got to tell you a funny story. When she was doing that, at that time, I was first, second tenor. I'm a baritone now.
Mm-hmm.
And the same lady that pulled me forward like that, it was really, really a funny story. Over the summer, my voice changed. And I used to sing like Eddie Kendricks, you know, all the first tenor guys. I had that kind of a voice.
Mm-hmm.
And over the summer, my voice dropped to a baritone. I was a baritone with 5 octaves.
Wow.
So that was still strong for a baritone. But the quality of my voice, I remember she called me. I graduated junior high school. I'm in the 10th grade the next year. And she had a function going on. And we always stayed in touch with each other. I owed her so much for what she did for me musically. So I always kept in touch with her. So I called her. She said, oh, your voice changed. I said, yeah, Mrs. Clark, it did get deeper over the summer. And she said, oh, my goodness. Oh, did you talk? I told you not to talk. I told you not to do this. I told you not. I said, Mrs. Clark, I'm a kid. I played a lot of basketball and football this summer. You know, there's a lot of howling and screaming. She said, let me hear you sing something. And I started singing. And I didn't get out more than a sentence. And she stopped me. She said, this is terrible, what you've done to your voice.
Oh, my Lord.
It is the voice that people listen to now. And she told me, she said, this is terrible, what you've done to your voice.
Oh,
so it took her a long time to accept me as, you know, the baritone singer that came, you know, from under her. But that was Mrs. Clark. She's a wonderful person, though.
Yeah, but the strangest thing about that is that Mrs. Clark should have known that was going to happen because that's what happened to kids, right?
Right.
Their voices get deeper and deeper. That's the, you know, as we get older, And so, but kudos to her for, you know, for blessing you and giving you that encouragement to do what you did. And I just want to ask you this real quickly. When she made that threat to the kids, did the kids look at you sideways? Like, what? Like,
They straightened up. I didn't get any side eye. I never got any repercussion behind her threat.
That's cool.
When she would say it, when she would pull that out of her, you know, her hat, the kids would straighten up because they actually believed that I could pull it off.
Okay.
And that was the biggest honor to me as I found out that my friends and people around me believed
in you. Yep. Amen. So this is in junior high school. So then as you went on, what happened after that? I mean, okay, now you got your confidence and you're feeling like, mm-hmm. okay, I could really do this if I wanted to. What happened right there that made you continue to pursue it?
Now I have to tell you what happened. I'm also a trumpet player. So during those years, being a trumpet player, I was playing in a couple of different funk bands in there. You might, you may remember groups like Breakwater. You remember Breakwater? My first cousin, Kay Williams, was a keyboard player.
That's your cousin?
And music director. Yes, my first cousin. He's no longer with us, but that's my cousin.
Guess who I just talked to yesterday?
Who? Daryl?
Daryl.
Daryl, you just talked to, that's what I said, Daryl.
That's my buddy. That's my buddy. Okay, but wow, this is a great story. Go ahead, finish telling.
Oh, yeah. So at that time, there were a lot of little funk bands in the area. Kay was in Breakwater. I was actually playing trumpet in a group called Sapphire. And Kay is a few years older than me, and Daryl and myself, we did more talking and so forth in school than Kay, because Kay was older and Kay was so busy doing the Breakwater thing as music director. But what happened was I was in a band called Sapphire. We had a four-piece horn section, and during those years, the tower power horn sections and all of that, you remember the big brass sections, was a time I was very happy, although I sang. I was very happy to just be in the background with my buddies playing horns and killing it. You know, we had a really good horn section. But what happened was the lead singer in the group got sick one night. And the manager of our group at that particular time, which is Al Gray Jr. Al Gray is a great, renowned jazz trombonist here out of Philadelphia, played with Duke Ellington and the Philadelphia, orchestra. Al Gray is a legend in this area for what he did from a jazz standpoint. Well, his son managed the group, and his other son, Michael, played trombone in the brass section. Well, the lead singer at the time, that night, he got sick, and he couldn't sing. And I don't think we were going to make Wardell more than maybe $25 a man that night.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't want them to take that little money from us because we couldn't do the show. So the manager came and he said, look, I need you guys, whatever lines you can sing from whatever song, I need you to sing it. So one guy was like, well, I know the first part of this song. I was like, okay, I know this part. And, you know, everybody started taking what part of the songs they knew. So we make it through the show. I think we got 20. There was nine of us in the band. We had roadies. We had all that stuff, man. We weren't making any money. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the night, the manager walked over to me, and he said, I didn't know you sang like that. I said, man, I told you I sang. He said, yeah, but I didn't know you sang like that. He said, the reaction that the crowd is walking up to me, what everybody's saying, is you should be the one singing.
Whoa.
Wardell, I was like, no, that's cool, man. If anything happens and y'all need me, you need me to step in, let me know. But I'm singing in some other situations, so I didn't want to sing with this band. I wanted to play horn. So I come to rehearsal the next day, and he tells me that I'm not going to be playing horn anymore. And I was like, yeah, I am. My mom just bought me a brand new horn, a box out of there. My horn, man. I'm playing
horn.
You're
not taking this away from me.
So, yeah, I'm not thinking anything else about it. And I come to rehearsal about 3 days after that, and I hear a trumpet player.
Oh, my goodness.
And I'm like, what did these idiots do? Who's in here on my spot? You know, I walk in, and a young brother named Monty runs over to me and starts hugging me and telling me, thank you. Thank you, man. Thank you. I'm like, thank you? What are you talking about? So at that point, we have to have a meeting. I'm like, oh, y'all got to tell me something. What is going on? And the group said, we sat down and we had a vote on it. We didn't know. You know, everybody heard you sing, but we didn't know. And so I started working in as one of the lead singers. That's when I started getting the side eye. And I remember one performance we were doing, I was singing You Brought the Sunshine by the OJs.
Wow.
Are You on My Sunshine?
Yes.
And my band stopped playing behind me. My band stopped playing. And I kept singing because I thought it was some type of a malfunction. And in this little bar we were in, it was no place, you know, it wasn't a gorgeous situation at all. Just a little dive. We're in there playing. People drunk on the bar stools and passed out at the tables. And it was a horrible situation for 15, 16-year-olds to be in. But anyway, we were there. And these women are yelling because I have this baritone bass voice as a kid. I was Johnny. You guys remember how people used to talk about Johnny Gill?
Right, right.
You remember he was a teenager with that big baritone voice?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I was Johnny Gill, but I was doing that when Johnny Gill was doing that.
Wow.
So I was already the kid with the big baritone voice. So these women are yelling and screaming, oh, my goodness, sing it, baby, sing it. When my band gets upset at these ladies standing up hollering and screaming, these grown women hollering at me, my band stops playing. I keep singing because I think it's some type of a mechanical problem.
Right, right.
And now you start hearing people saying, oh, my goodness, he can sing a cappella. He don't even need music. So it's just getting bigger and bigger. But it's more and more of an insult to my band. And the guy that used to sing lead had developed resentment towards me, now being one of the star lead singers in the group. He wasn't happy at all.
Oh,
and his brother was on drums, and their very best player, friend, played bass. So I'm waiting for the music to chime back in. I keep singing the song, and the women are still hollering and screaming. And the cord to the PA system is plugged out in the hallway next to the bathroom. And out of the side of my eye, I see somebody walking out, I think, to plug, you know, everything back in to get the band going again. And he walks over. I won't say any name. He walks over, and I'm still singing through the PA. I just don't have any music. And he pulls the cord on the PA. And that's when I realized that I was having a small mutiny with my band.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
There was no technical problem.
Wow.
So after that, not long after that, I quit the band. But it also, a lot of people got to hear me and see me. So a lot of other people called me to do things. And so it all worked out. That's the one thing about staying positive, Wardell. If you just keep plugging, you can still do whatever you need to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's a sad story because it. I mean, when I'm listening to it, it starts hurting me because I recognize what was happening to you, and so.
No,
but you know, sometimes, huh? What's that? I'm
sorry. Yeah, no, please don't take that way because I'm gonna, you know, I really mean it when I say, if you are a strong person of good character, negatives make you stronger because you may have had one direction you were going in, and negatives cause you to find another direction to still go the same way.
Absolutely.
You
got to
work a little.
Right.
Especially in this. And you know, you've been doing this a long time, Wardell. You know, you run into bumps, you run into obstacles, and you can't get through this wall or around it.
Yeah.
You can't
get
this hurdle and go under. You know.
So my sadness was not really for you because you're still here doing it, right? My sadness was more for them. Like, why would you have so much hatred in your heart, you know, and that you won't even play? And that's kind of scary because your job is to play. That's what you're being paid for. It may not be a lot of money, but you're still being paid for it. And that's what you came there for. And to actually just, you know, pull the plug because you are frustrated because one person is getting more attention than you are, or your friend told you to do that. It just feels a sign of weakness, and it just makes me sad for them. I hope that they grew from that as well. I hope they learned from it as well, you know. And they just go ahead.
No, go ahead, but I'll finish.
No. Okay, I'm sorry. Just to let everybody know, we have like a 5-minute delay, so that's when we're speaking. So I'm sorry we're kind of talking on top of each other, but anyway, man. So your story just goes on and on and on, and I don't want to get stuck in the mud there. But I'm glad that you were able to, you know, continue to move forward and stuff. So at that point, you did. What happened with you and your trumpet? Your voice, is it like an internal conversation between you, you know, with your horn?
What actually happened is one of my brother's oldest son decided he wanted to play trumpet in my footsteps. And he always was viewed it, looked up to his uncle. So he started playing trumpet. And when he went to school, they gave him a Constellation little horn. It was the most beat up, ugliest thing I'd ever seen. So I told my brother and my nephew, I said, look, I'm doing more singing now. Nobody was calling me to play trumpet anymore. Everybody was calling me to sing. I had just gotten fired. Now I'm going to really give you some insight into this musical ride. The great Eddie Holman, Hey There Lonely Girl. Remember
mm-hmm.
Eddie, right?
Yes.
Eddie Holman lived around the corner from me in Mount Air. And one day I was walking my dog and I heard this band playing, so I sat on the wall and I listened. And I'm 16 years old, just turned 16 years old. The rehearsal wraps up. I'm standing out there waiting to see what's going on, and it's Eddie Holman's band. This is Eddie Holman's house. I didn't know he lived around the corner from me. So Eddie Holman's band comes out, and they're like, hey, kid, what you doing? Listening to music. I'm like, yes, sir. Y'all sound good, man. I'm just listening. They said, what do you do? I said, I play trumpet. They say, we're looking for a trumpet player. I said, oh, wow, God. What do I need to do? They said, stop by next rehearsal. You can audition. Show us what you can do. So I'm there early for the next rehearsal. I come in. They call off a couple of songs. They need me to play with them and play the horn parts, and I'm playing the horn parts. You got the job. I'm
Whoa.
The happiest person on the planet. I got to play trumpet with the great Eddie Holman.
Wow.
And so what happens is, now the story gets better. One night I come to rehearsal, and during that time, Stevie Wonder, you remember I Wish?
Yes.
Had the horns, and, you know, and Stevie sang it. I'm the drummer and the bass player and the keyboard player are playing that just for the heck of it. There's an open mic right there. I'm not on the mic. I'm standing in the room, and they're grooving it so good. I just start singing it. Looking
mm-hmm.
back on when, so I'm just falling
into it.
One of them says to me, step up to the mic, kid. Step up to the mic, because I'm probably 7-8 years or more, you know, under everybody else. I mean, it's a big age difference. So I get on the mic, and I'm singing, and we're sounding good. And Eddie's manager comes in. And Eddie's manager looks at me. He's smiling. He's nodding his head. He's letting me know, yeah, you sound good, kid. So I'm thinking, maybe one day I can open for Eddie, right?
Right.
Well, Eddie has some kind of way. He went upstairs. He comes back downstairs, totally different attitude. He said, let me help you understand. You never, ever sing on Eddie Holman's set again.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, man. He said, you never, ever sing on Eddie's set again. So I was like, okay, so I shut up. I won't ever sing in here again. Now, this is the end of my trumpet playing, but this is the truth. This is how I ended. I stopped playing trumpet. So we go to do a show out in the park, and Eddie is the headliner of the show. I'm just there to play trumpet, but it's on a park over in Germantown, off of Germantown Avenue. Germantown High School is like probably 4 blocks up the road, so you got all these kids down there, and a lot of kids that I knew from school in the area from playing in this little funk band, Sapphire. So they're all in the crowd, and Eddie's singing these ballads, and he's singing these ballads, and he's singing these ballads. We're not doing any songs with any fire on a beautiful summer day. People want some music that's bumping, right?
Mm.
One of the kids stands up, Wardell, and says, let him sing. And he points to me.
He said,
let him sing. And another kid stood up and said, yeah, let him sing.
What?
Then that whole little section of kids started chiming in. Yeah, yeah, let Rodney sing. Let Rodney sing. Eddie looked at me. I got fired, Wardell.
Got fired. That's it.
I got fired.
Good gracious. So
I got fired. We finished the set. They let me know that they, I'm fired. I can't come back no more. My brother's son starts playing trumpet. The school gives him a little Constellation horn. It was in really bad shape. I'm not playing with anybody anymore after that. And I wound up lending it to my brother for my nephew. And I told him, look, this is a loan. You guys, you quit playing. You can have it as long as you play trumpet. Till you die, as long as you play trumpet. But if you stop playing, give me my horn back. And that was how I started just concentrating on singing. That was the end of my trumpet playing career.
Wow. That's absolutely. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing that. Now, we are, I'm enjoying this conversation. I want to play your song, and then I have a brother from the UK that I'm going to bring in, and he's got a couple questions for you as well. And then, then we'll finish it up, okay? So, but man, oh man,
okay.
I those stories really are heart wrenching. Woo, Lord have mercy.
Just a part of life, Wardell.
Just a part of life, man. Yes, sir.
Just a part of life.
So I want you to tell us something about this next song, because I want people that may have just tuned in to hear you, and then we'll come back and finish your story. Can you tell us about this song, Let Me Know?
Yeah, I...
You got a little story about that?
I had two people that were very close to me, and they were very, very, very distant within their relationship. And it was causing them so many problems because they did not communicate. And it was like, if the song is Let Me Know, and you realize that her part of it is saying, let me know if you want me. And his answer to that was, you let me know if you want me. And so I after observing this relationship for many years, one day I started to write the song. And it was about two people that were very close to me at that time. They since have divorced. But it was a powerful time in my life because I realized how important communication is. If people sit down and talk to one another, you can, you can work out anything, Wardell. But if you don't talk, you can't guess. Like, I can't guess who you are.
Yes, yes.
And it's conversation. It's conversation that causes people to love. It's conversation that causes people to like, but it's a lack of conversation that brings in a lot of negatives, because then people begin guessing
right
how you feel and what you think. And there can't be anything more dangerous than not communicating in a relationship.
Wow. Hey, that's well said. Well said. All right. So let's just take a listen to this. And this is our brother, Rodney Mansfield on Soul Eye Records Radio. This song is called Let Me Know. We'll be right back. You have so many different looks, dude. I have so many different pictures of you. I'm like, that's the same person.
Hey,
you have all these looks.
This called time, look, man.
With the look in the video, that look in that video right there, let me know. You look just like my cousin. You look just like him. I'm like, what's going on here? Petey can't see. That's my cousin's PD. You can't see. I'm like, you look just like him.
Hopefully you like the cousin that I look like, man.
Oh, I love him. He's like my little brother. He's my little brother, actually. But he's my cousin. But my dad was mad at his brother, which was my cousin's dad. And he says, your son's staying with me until you get your act together. So my little cousin, My little cousin stayed with me all the time. He was always with me. So, but anyway, listen, I want to say that was a great song. Whoa, what a beautiful voice, man. I love the lyrical content. I love the story. I love the way that you, you know, you delivered the goods. And so great job. Job well done, my brother. Wow, that's amazing. Great song. Great song. So, and so I have my brother here, Greg from UK. Greg, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Wardell. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So, Greg, meet Rodney, and Rodney, meet Greg. You guys have been going back and forth on the email, and Greg is the one that brought you you to me, Rodney. But so I was like, wow. So I appreciate you, Greg. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. It's an absolute honor to talk to you, Rodney. Completely my privilege. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Greg, did we ever – I've come to London and performed 3 times. Did we ever meet or anything?
No. When did you come to London?
My first performance was at the Hippodrome.
Okay.
Do you remember the Hippodrome?
Yes, I know the Hippodrome, yeah.
Okay, my first time coming over was performing at the Hippodrome. Then I came over for the Weekender. You familiar with the Weekender?
Yes, of course, yes.
And I came over twice to perform for the Weekender.
No, I didn't know that you'd done that. Otherwise, I would have been there.
Yeah, I was wondering because I met so many wonderful people while I was over there. I was like, maybe it's one of the guys that, you know, I met when I was there. But okay, I'll see you the next time I'm there.
Absolutely. I really hope so.
So,
I wanted to ask you, Rodney, about the songs that we just played, which the 3 songs that you sent to us to play are exactly the songs I would have chosen anyway. So we're obviously singing from the same page there. But the song that you sent with Veronica Underwood. Did you ever work with Veronica again? And who else would you like to duet with?
Veronica and myself keep in touch.
Okay.
We've never done anything together since. I did have a show that I was trying to bring Veronica in on, but she was unable to do it at that time. But no, we've never worked. And in fact, I'll give you a little something else. I did not know I had written a song. I'm playing bass on that track. I did bass. I did some string lines and horns on that track. And a bass player whose studio re-recorded it, and also Dr. Derek Graves, phenomenal jazz bass player. I mean, he was signed to Philly International, had his own record deal. We cut that at his studio, and when I first wrote the song, I didn't know if I wanted to do it as a duet or not. So I get to the studio. We're laying the track, and I looked over at Derek. I said, Derek, I need a lady. I want to do this as a duet. I need a female vocalist. So he said, well, I've got a couple of ladies that come through my studio. You know, let me put some phone calls in and see who we can get over here tonight to do it. And he called, you know, one or two people, and finally he reached out to Veronica, and she came over, killed it, and I've never seen her again.
Wow, that's such a shame.
I didn't know her, but when you start doing sets like this, it happens. You go to the studio, they hire somebody to come in, they come in, do a phenomenal job, and you may or may not ever see the people again. I mean, it just happens.
One of the strengths about that song is the way both your voices blend so beautifully.
Oh, she had a phenomenal voice.
Yes.
Phenomenal. But you know what's amazing is there is a female singer here in Jersey named Grace. Have you ever heard of Grace Little?
No.
Phenomenal. She's a phenomenal singer and performer. And Veronica and Grace remind me so much of each other, you know, at the top of the game, just phenomenal performers, both of them.
Well, I thought that on the track that we played, Veronica's voice lends itself towards Patti LaBelle.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So there's no greater compliment than that.
Yes, she has a great tone quality and feel. Her delivery was excellent.
Okay, can I ask you a question going back away now? So you've talked about Anne Swain Clark, but on your first album, you give credit to Bertha Mansfield and Geraldine Williams and how they believed in you and took you up. Can you elaborate on that?
Okay, hold on. You broke up. I heard okay. Geraldine Williams. I didn't hear the first name you said.
Bertha Mansfield.
Bertha Mansfield?
Yes.
That's my mother.
I thought that was your mother. I wasn't sure.
Yeah, that's my mother, Bertha.
So who was Geraldine Williams?
My former manager, that's his mother.
Okay.
But we became friends when I think I was 12 and he was 11. So I spent so much time at that house that she was like a second mother. In fact, I just spoke with her about 2 weeks ago. She's, she's older, but she's still doing well and still a wonderful person in my life.
Okay, that's lovely.
Anything else?
Yes, I've got about 200 questions, but Wardell will kick me off. So you said that getting the call to say that you were being signed to A&M was the happiest day of your life. So why did you not follow up with another album with them?
That wasn't my choice.
Okay.
The record industry went through a turn. There was some problems happening with the people that had signed me. And normally at record companies, the act that was signed by someone else, when they come in to run the division, that act normally gets booted out.
Okay.
Unless you've already established the status of a Phyllis Hyman, a Patti LaBelle. Unless you're at that level, when they come in, if you're still in the building stages of your career, you normally get booted.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And although they promised a second album. That's a whole nother story, what happened to that. If you got a minute, I'll tell you about it.
Yeah, do. Yeah, please.
What happened was Alexander O'Neill, the great Alexander O'Neill,
wow,
was in a rehab situation. He went through a period in his life when he was having some problems. So every time somebody wanted at any function a male artist to come, A&M would send me. But when he came out of the rehab, what happened was his godfather, Gerald Busby, who was a powerhouse in the music industry. At one point, Gerald managed Babyface in L.A. Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis and Babyface in L.A. So you couldn't get the hottest music producers in the industry if you didn't go through Gerald Busby.
Mm.
Well, Alexander O'Neill was Gerald Busby's godfather. So when Alex came out, I was on the road promoting my first album with A&M, and we had a meeting, and they told me, they said, look, we're going to pull off of your album for 1 week. Alexander O'Neill will go breaker in 1 week. I had gone breaker in 1 week. You guys have heard of that before, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so I had gone breaker in 1 week. Well, Alex was so much bigger than I was. They anticipated, during this meeting, they anticipated when we had this conference call that Alex would go breaker within 1 week also. But Alex, when he came out of his situation, he didn't want to do voiceovers. He didn't want to call into the radio stations and do those type of things. He felt like he was Alexander O'Neill. He was bigger than that. So it took them almost 2.5 weeks for him to go breaker. So my record sat dormant for 2.5 weeks. And it pulled all of the momentum that we had going. I had done Black Programmers to great act. That went extremely well. I'd done so many performances that went over very, very well. And when they pulled off on me for 3 weeks, it was as if I disappeared. And we weren't able to get that momentum going, and told me we would do a second album, but that never came to be. So that was sort of how my A&M situation ended.
Oh, okay. Now, what year were you at A&M? Because I was there, too.
91 to 93.
Okay, so I just left. Good gracious. I just left.
90.
And the ironic thing is that I was there from 96 until... I hear some papers in the background or something. I'm not sure what that is. But I was there from 86 to 91. And so when you came, I left, and I went to New York. You came to California. That is so weird. That's so wild.
I came
so
once.
What's that?
You remember they had Jeffrey for a moment?
Yeah, Jeffrey and I were there. We had a room together. Well, we didn't have a room together. That's not true. We were signed to the same publishing company. Did you know Brenda Andrews?
Brenda Andrews. No, I didn't know her personally. I know of her. I didn't know her personally.
Oh, the publisher, right? The publisher of Almo Irving.
Yeah.
Did you sign with Almo
right.
Irving?
Then,
you
yeah,
were signed
with
Brenda.
I know who she is. I just don't know her.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so anyway, so we were in the building right next door to the record company. The publishing company was Herb's publishing company was right next door, Herb Alpert, and so we were, you know, so Jeffrey would come there almost every 3 to 4 days because he was a writer as well, but he was really writing for himself pretty much, and but he would come there all the time, him and Joey Diggs. So did you have a relationship with Jeffrey?
No, but the very first time I ever sang in a Coliseum was because of Jeffrey Osborne. He'd had out his new single was the song "Can You Woo Woo Woo."
Right.
There's a guy, I don't know if he has a cousin in Greensboro, North Carolina. I don't know, his name is Dwayne. And I don't know if Dwayne is still with us, but whenever Jeffrey came to the Greensboro Coliseum, he would let Dwayne come up and sit on the side of the stage and sing. And he had pretty much the same tone. He's a big man, so he had a real big tone, and he sounded very much like Jeffrey.
Mm.
And at every show, Jeffrey, when he came through North Carolina in those days, Dwayne always got to come up, sit on the side of the stage, and sing.
Oh, that's nice.
But but what happened this time was Jeffrey was doing the Woo 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 song, and he came out in the audience, and he was asking everybody if they could woo woo woo. So people are running in the aisles to get to Jeffrey to woo, woo, woo. And I come over, and he gives the person to the mic, to a person standing to the left of me. They sing. We make eye contact. I hope he's going to give me the mic. He doesn't give me the mic. I follow him another 10 feet away. He gives someone else the mic. I'm standing in this white suit. Give someone else the mic.
Give somebody else the mic.
So I follow him around during this segment of that song, and he keeps giving everybody the mic but me. And finally, I give up. I'm like, he's not going to let me sing. And I'm getting ready to go back to my seat. He had turned his back and started walking towards the stage. And I went to turn and leave, and he stopped, and he said, wait a minute. And I turned around to see what he was talking about, and he was talking to me. And he said, can you woo, woo, woo? And I looked at him, and I nodded. I said, yeah. He said, you can woo, woo, woo. I said, yeah, Mr. Osborne, I can woo, woo, woo. He said, all right. He walked over, and he gave me the mic, right? This was my very first time singing at a Coliseum level. He walked over. He handed me the mic. I started singing. The crowd started screaming. I don't know what I sang. I'm not kidding you.
Weren't saying woo woo woo?
I was riffing on the woo 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 thing,
and the
crowd got so loud I couldn't even hear what I was doing. But at the end of the show, people were walking over and shaking my hand and patting me on the back. But people were also saying he was a prop. He wasn't a guy in the audience.
Right. Like it was planned.
Yeah, lots of people walked by me and, you know, said hello, and they were like, you were prop, right? They set that up. You knew you was going to do it. They knew you. And I'm like, no, I've never met Jeffrey. You know, I've always loved his work. Mm-hmm. And so that was my first encounter with Jeffrey. My A&R person at A&M was over at the studio, and played a demo tape of Nita Jeffery, and this was one of the biggest compliments I've ever had through my entire music career. He played a demo tape of me, and Jeffery said to him, "Is he out of North Carolina?" And he said, "Yeah." And Jeffery said, "Yeah." He said, "I know who he is." He said, "He sang at my show." And my A&R man called me and said, "You sang at Jeffrey Osborne's show?" I said, "Well, I didn't really." He wouldn't have known it if Jeffery hadn't told him. He would not have known. He called me and said, "You sang at Jeffrey Osborne's concert?" I said, "Yeah, I did this little woo-woo-woo thing." He said, "Well, I'm going to tell you something. He remembered you. I played his demo for him. I played your demo for him to see what he thought of your voice. And I'm playing the song, and he's sitting there nodding his head, listening to it. And he said, he was like, hey, this guy's out of North Carolina." So he remembered me from that.
Wow. Who was your A&R man? Who's your A&R man? Oh, we lost him. We lost him for a second. So he'll call back in. Man, oh, man, this guy's got a story. It goes on and on and on. And I want to thank Rodney Mansfield so much for, you know, for blessing us with this story. And are you still there, Greg?
I'm still here with questions.
Okay. Nothing but questions on my mind. Hey, Rodney, I was asking you, who was your A&R director?
His name was Kevin. He had come, in fact, I think he had worked his name, I won't give out any last names, but he worked his way up from the mailroom, but his name was Kevin.
Okay, yeah, I don't know who that is. Okay, I was just trying to see if I knew who it was. But anyway, man, so I really want to thank you guys. We got 2 minutes left, and so before we go, I got to let Greg ask one more question, Greg, and then I want you to tell us your, you know, how people could follow you and support your career and stuff. So go ahead, Greg, take your time and get your questions.
Okay. So I really think that we couldn't have you on, Rodney, without talking about the song "What Have We Done?" Because
What Have We Done?
Yeah. Because the video...
Have you seen that video?
That video, that is one powerful message. And I think it's probably the most powerfully executed music, political statement videos I think I've ever seen. So people should check that out. I've posted it. So the question to you is, how important is music to bring about change?
Music has always been a part of any major change. There's always been some song that's been selected as an anthem for whatever the situation may be. And I think that when people, if you make people feel good, whether it's in a ballad, whether it's mid-tempo, whether they're dancing, you can deliver any type of message with music as long as it's done tastefully.
Yes.
And it's funny that you should mention that song, because when I wrote that song, I was watching television. I was watching the news with my wife, and it was the beginning of COVID, and our president at that time made a statement that it was like 5 cases in America and it was going to be out of here within 2 weeks. And I knew something was wrong when he said that. And I turned to her and I said, "Oh boy, what have we done?" And as soon as I said, "What have we done?" it hit me. I ran downstairs to my keyboard. I have a recording studio in my home. I ran downstairs to the studio. I fired up my equipment and I started writing the song. And then I was able to get the great piano player, producer, writer, arranger, Johnny Coombs, out of Philadelphia. Wardell, do you know Johnny by any chance?
Very well.
Oh, you
Very
know Johnny
well.
Coombs?
Yes.
Okay, well, I was blessed to have Johnny Coombs come over and do some keyboard work and horns. Stacey McGee, bass player. You know Stacey?
No.
Stacey is a bass player extraordinaire. I think he's playing now with Kathy Sledge.
Okay.
But he's played bass with Genuine, Kathy Sledge. I think he's done some stuff with Beyonce. I mean, he the two of them have done a who's who of people that they've recorded with.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to pull some people in to help me bring the track to life. But the message was simply that, you know, and it wasn't just about COVID. It was about life, things that we're doing that we're going to pay a price for eventually. And as you watch the last couple of months, the things that are happening here in the country, something is wrong, man.
Absolutely.
Something is bad wrong, which leads me back to what have we done? Because something's not right. But
yes,
that was the whole concept of the song. Then Wendell, the video producer, his name is Wendell. When I delivered this track to Wendell, I said, Wendell, if possible, I'd like you, everything that's happening throughout the country and the world right now, can you bring that to life along with this music? And he did an incredible job. When you watch that video,
I just
played that for an associate of mine that wasn't aware that I'd done that video. And he watched it, and he looked at me and said, why is that on like a soundtrack or a movie? And I said, I don't know. I got to talk to my manager, Ms. Gloria Butler, and see what we can do.
Gloria. Yes, you do. All right. Yeah, I mean, so thank you.
We're working on it.
Thank you.
It's
for,
in progress.
You know, all right. Oh, Gloria's there. Gloria's in
yes,
the house,
Gloria's
everybody.
Here.
Hello, Ms. Butler. Gloria, where's
hello,
my cheese
hello.
Steak? Come on, Gloria.
It's in the mail.
I keep going to the mailbox. I've been going to the mailbox ever since Greg mentioned you guys. I haven't gotten. So, but anyway, thanks again, Rodney. But I just have to say in regards to that song, thank you for, you know, not being afraid to tell the truth and put it out there for people, you know, to hear it and see it. Sometimes it takes, you know, a village, right? And different people do their parts, and we got to do what we got to do to make sure that we share, you know, what's really going on. And sometimes, like, a lot of our kids won't listen to, you know, the news and all that kind of stuff, but they listen to your music. And so that's an opportunity for you to, you know, to share that, you know, the political side of what's happening and hopefully get them involved in, you know, voting. And because I know a lot of kids don't want to vote. They don't think about it. They're so busy, you know, on their iPads and running around and playing. You know, like my friend is a gamer. He's sitting right there. My co-host, he's a gamer. But he's a very strong advocate for, you know, politics. He's always involved in it somehow. But there's a lot of kids that needed to hear that, man. So thank you. And adults needed to hear that as well. So thank you so much for, you know, investing in us. And when I say us, I mean the world, by sharing. Because a lot of people don't even want to talk about politics because it's a personal thing nowadays because people get a little crazy. So thank you, sir. And thank you for coming on and sharing your story with us. Rodney, do you want to tell people how they can support you and follow you?
They can reach out. You can. I'm on Facebook, RodneyMansfield.com. Mansfield with two N's, RodneyMansfield.com. You know, I'm on Instagram. So there are a lot of ways people can support us. But something I would ask of your partner that was asking me the question from the UK, hook us up with a promoter so we can get back to London, man.
Hook us
up with a promoter so we can get back over. I want to tell you something about my experience in the UK. There was nothing like it. I've done 80,000 people, the Memphis Coliseum. I've done large venues like that. I did South Carolina outdoor venue, 32,000 people. When I came to London and did that show at the Hippodrome, immediately, I know we're out of time, but immediately after that, it was a promoter from the UK called and offered me to do a gig opening for Whitney Houston for 4 months.
Wow.
The only problem was I had to have $89,000 to pay for my section of the tour.
What?
It was the a lot of opening acts, they don't get paid. A lot of opening acts don't get paid. And what happens is your record company, for the promotion that you get, being with artists of that caliber, you come, you do your performance, but you don't get paid for it. So when he called and told me how much they appreciated my performance at the Hippodrome, he said, we want to make you an offer for you to come on the road with Whitney Houston for 4 months. But we've estimated, and he told me, he said, you have to have two background singers. He said, but we've estimated hotel rooms, travel, it's going to be around $89,000. And I was like, man, I don't have $89,000. He said, we kind of anticipated that. He said, you have to reach out to your record company and tell them and have them put that into the budget for you to be able to do this. But everything was being shut down. Artists were being juggled over to Motown. So, and the person that would have signed the check for me, and I'll say his name, he was so kind to me when I was at A&M, was Mr. Miller London. He was senior vice president of A&M R&B at that time. And when we reached out to Miller and let Miller know, we got that phone call. I got that phone call personally from a promoter from the UK. And the money that was needed, he thought that was fantastic, but he soon lost his job. So that took that away from me. But I do realize the importance of my UK following. I've been contacted many, many, many times over the years from people from the UK, Australia, Germany. But I've been to the UK 3 times to perform, and every time I've gone over, I received nothing but great love. So I want to thank you, my brother, on the other end of the phone. And please tell everybody we said hello. But if you know a good promoter that can help us come back over, please let us know.
I'm going to check that out.
Talk to you. Huh?
All right. And then one last thing. He said he's going to check that out. So he'll look into that for you. And
all right, we appreciate it, man. Thank you.
And let Miss Gloria know. And
okay,
so,
that works.
But there's the other thing I want to mention, Rodney. We talked about it earlier, and I told you how much I'm in love with South Africa. And you had mentioned something about South Africa. What was it about South Africa that it's got your attention?
My following on Facebook, Africa supports me. My, you know, the brothers and sisters in Africa, their support of me is phenomenal. I mean, it's phenomenal. They reach out in numbers. They tag me in great numbers. They play my music in great numbers.
Wow.
They constantly, when I'm coming to South Africa to perform. And again, it comes back to the promoters, you know, because I can't just show up over there and perform. I have to have some things set. Venue,
right. Oh, yeah.
So I've talked to them. There have been a couple of radio stations that said, you know, when they start doing some things next year and this summer, that they would reach out and see what they could do to bring us in. So, you know, it will eventually happen. But I have a wonderful following through South Africa and Africa, period.
Well, let's give a shout out to our friends over in South Africa right now. Much love to you guys, and thank you for loving our music. I mean, that, you know, I went there and it was just, I had such, like I told you, I was there for 9 months, and I almost forgot I needed to get home. I was so intrigued with, you know, how kind and wonderful the people are, despite what the news feed was trying to tell me. When I got there, I was like, wow, this is beautiful. And so I really enjoyed myself there. So I'm glad that the people are loving on you and supporting in your career and stuff. And so anyway, we're up and out of here. Don Fleming, are you there for real?
I'm here now. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, can you hear me?
Okay. All right. So, Don, yeah, Don, I wanted to introduce you to Rodney and Rodney Mansfield.
Hello.
And, oh, man. I'm good, Don. Rodney. It's good hearing you, good listening to you. And I mean, man, you just, I'm a new fan.
Amen.
But I have to say to you guys, you know, we've all been doing this a long time, right? And I was saying this to Gloria's husband. We had a function at my house on Sunday, which turned out extremely well. And we had a bunch of people, musicians, Warren Ory and his band performed. I sang a couple of songs. But I was talking to Gloria's husband about this music thing. And at the end of the day, you know, we all hope, you know, we all hope for it to pay a few bills, but I think it's the love of it that keep us going, because I've met, like, meeting you guys. The best part of doing this music thing isn't just doing the music. It's the people that you meet all over the world behind music. And it truly does bridge, you know, it crosses all barriers and colors and gender. And music is a wonderful, wonderful thing, guys. That's why I do it.
Amen. Amen. Well, thank you for doing it, man. And don't ever stop. We appreciate you. And we will support your career and keep your legacy alive here on Solar Records Radio. And appreciate it. And whenever you are, you know, releasing new material, whatever, please come, you know, make this your home. Come and release, you
please.
Know, have a release party with us. And let us share with the listeners, you know, your new material and stuff. And make sure Gloria send me a hoagie when you do that. Hold it. But I'm coming home, man. I'm coming to see my mom sometime. And you know, the strangest thing, somehow it always opened up in the winter. And I hate coming out there in the winter because it's so cold. It's so cold. I'm not used to that anymore. I've been away from Philly since 1979. But it seems like every time I go to visit, it's wintertime. And I'm like, what is wrong? Why can't I schedule to go in the summertime to visit? It is just too cold there, man. But the food is amazing, and my friends and family, I love and miss them, and so can't wait. But listen, when I come there, like, man, let's get together. Let's hang out.
Hey, most definitely. Let me know when you come, and we'll make sure we take you to get a cheesesteak and a good steak.
Hey, there you go. That's what I'm talking about. I know.
I might have to come to that.
I've moved on from cheesesteaks to ribeyes. That's my cousin.
Oh, wow. Okay. Moving on up. All right. Well, God bless you guys. And thank you. Hey, so listen, we're up and out of here. So, Greg, you want to say anything before we get out? Greg's on the line, Don. Greg, did you want to say anything?
Yeah, cool.
Go ahead, Greg.
I don't. Yeah, so Rodney, you and Gloria, I know you'll understand me when I say this, but jam on.
Jam on.
Thank you so much, Greg. Greg, just quick. Are you in the UK now, or are you in the US?
Yeah, the UK.
Okay, great.
Yes, that's there you go. He's the one that did the flyers and stuff for you guys as well. So thanks, Greg, for that.
You're so welcome. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
So as we go out, Rodney, can you just tell us a little bit about this last song I'm going to play? It's called A Song for You.
Wow.
There's not a whole lot for me to say except that song was done by the great, great one and only Donny Hathaway.
Oh.
And when I decided to do it as a part of, I have an old English bulldog that's trying to let me know I've been in the other room without him for too long. Now, somebody's supposed to get him for it, but if you're hearing, you know what's happening. But let me make this quick. When I decided I wanted to do that song on the A&M album, Michael Powell of Anita Baker fame, he was like, he wants to do a song for you? And they were like, yeah, he wants to do a song for you. So Michael said, he's got to come in and prove that he can do that song before we cut that. So I fly to Detroit, and Mr. Vernon Selsby, lost one of the greatest piano players the world has ever known, Vernon Selsby. But anyway, Vernon had done, he and Michael Powell had done the track, come in just to sing on the track to get the approval to cut the song. And we do the songs You know, I sing the track down. Michael listens. He says, yeah, let the guy do the track. So this is my rendition of a song for you. Then we take it into a little bit of a jazz scat thing on the end of it, but you'll get to hear Mr. Vernon Fells on piano, guys. And it truly was an honor and a privilege to have known him, to have worked with him, and to have something that I can say that I can have forever with Mr. Vernon Fells on it. So please listen to, don't listen to me, listen to the piano player when you listen to this song. Please listen to the piano.
When did we lose him?
It's been a few years now.
Okay.
It's been about 4 years.
Okay.
Did you know Vernon?
No, I didn't know him.
Oh, okay.
But my condolences to him and the family.
Yeah.
And
when you hear him on this, well, you've heard, when you listen to him on this track,
okay. All right. Well, take care, and thank you so much, Rodney, and thanks, Gloria, and Don and Greg. You guys are awesome. Well, Don, we got a whole another half a show to go, so you guys take care, be blessed, and we'll catch you later on the other side. Once again, Mr. Rodney Mansfield, the song, A Song for You on Solar Records Radio. We'll be back.
I've been so many places in my life and time. I've sung a lot of songs, I've made some bad rhymes, I've acted out my life on stages with 10,000 people watching, but we're alone now. Your image of me is what I'd hoped to be, but I treated you unkindly. Darling, can't you see there's no one more important to me? Baby, can't you see through me? 'Cause we're alone now and I'm singing a song. Taught me precious secrets of a true love, holding nothing. You came out in front when I was hiding.
Wow. Wow. Love, love, love.
I know, man. I know, man.
Good gracious. Man, come on, Rodney. I let him borrow my voice and he just, she. Oh, man. Greg, don't you love that?
Well, that's my favorite song of all time.
Oh, wow.
Wow. He answered me. I got a question about...
Rodney, you still there?
Yeah.
Aren't you?
Yeah, that's okay. He answered the question anyway.
We were trying to compliment you without you hearing it.
Oh, okay. I didn't know I was supposed to hang up. I was hanging in here till the end. I'm
going
to tell
great.
You something. When Vernon did that song, we were in the studio and there were concerns about the length of the track. But where that track fades out is when Vernon takes over and he's playing piano.
Uh-huh.
What he laid, which we weren't able to keep behind time constraints, he was a phenomenal piano player.
Yes. Absolutely. I heard it. I heard him going into it, too. Like, you know, but it was fading.
Yeah,
so.
But
when
he started that in the end of that fade, I was like, man, just let that roll. People would buy that record, you know, just to hear Vernon on the end of it.
Oh, absolutely.
He was so strong. But, you know, again, like I said, we lost him a few years back. But a lot of the Anita Baker albums and so forth, Vernon's there. You hear him, you don't know it's him, but Vernon's there.
You could always edit that and put him back in the middle somewhere in the front. You can edit.
Yeah, that could be done.
Yeah, do a remix. But, man, thank you again, man. You guys are awesome. Thank you. Thanks, Gloria. Appreciate you very much.
Okay, you're welcome.
Thank you, Wanda. Thank you, guys. We're going to be in touch, okay? Thanks, folks.
All right. Okay.
All right.
Most definitely.
Y'all have a good day.
Okay. See you guys. Bye-bye.
All right.
Pretty cool. That was great. All right, guys.
Yes,
so,
indeed, man. We enjoyed it. I enjoyed the interview. I enjoyed his interpretation of a song for you, man. I'm very critical of anything Donny Hathaway, anyone covering, even his daughter covering, you know, Donny Hathaway's music. I'm critical, but man, it's even with Layla, you just got to be like, you know what? I can see this is great. This is a great version. And you know, my hats off to him, man. And of course, rest in peace to that brother you guys were talking about.
Yeah,
definitely, you definitely hear it in Anita Baker's music also. So.
Yeah. Now, Greg, you were saying something. You got cut off. So, do you remember what you were saying, Greg?
No, I just got a question about exactly that song. I wanted to know. I thought that the way that song transitioned from the traditional version to that jazz scat type ending. I wanted to know whose concept that was, but he answered the question anyway.
Oh, good. See? Good question. And, man, I was about to say, I hope you don't ask me that question. Because, you know, I don't know. I don't know the answer. But anyway, guys, I want to thank you, Greg, for hanging out today. And
Thank you.
Greg brought that artist to us, and so... Thank you. He happened to be one of my homeboys, so that's real cool.
Okay.
Philly boy, yeah. So anyway, all right, guys. So we're going to get back to the music here, and So just let Miss Jackson the song that I was in South Africa when this song came out, but it's not her singing it. This is a jazz version with Norman Brown playing the guitar version of the song, That's the Way Love Goes. So, but anyway, and so we're going to keep on moving here on Soul Out Records Radio. We only got about another 33 minutes, so I don't know if you guys are hanging out or not, but here we go. We're rocking and rolling on Soul Out Records Radio. We'll be back, guys.
We're sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.
He may makes you laugh, he brings you out in style. He treats you well, he makes you look real fun. And when he's strong for you. And when you kiss, it's just something new. But did you ever call my name just by mistake? I'm not quite sure what we're supposed to do. So I just write some love.
Radio, yes, it is what we call Indie Jazz Wednesday. I had hooked that up. Of course, Wardell is controlling the board, but I had to request that. That's music from the Robert Glasper Experiment featuring Bilal, Letter to Hermione, which was an old David Bowie song, man, and I love the way he twisted it from the 2012 album Black Radio. Big fan of Robert Glasper, man, straight out of Houston, Texas. Just an accomplished pianist, just an amazing brother. Has got a new album out right now, so you guys got to check it out. Of course, before that, hooked up a little Moonchild, a neo soul group, white band. I'm just making just great music. You Got One featuring Alex Isley. Of course, Alex Isley is the daughter of Ernie Isley. You Got One. I love that song. Very beautiful song, of course. Wardell, you started off the block with a song. Go ahead and talk a little bit about that also.
Norman Brown, That's the Way Love Goes.
The Way Love Goes. Yeah. The old Janet Jackson, little jazzy twist to Janet Jackson classic.
Mm-hmm. And man, oh man, I tell you, I was really into it as a young man down in South Africa when that song came out with Janet, the original version. Mm-hmm. Ooh, mm-hmm. Man, I tell you, it was one of those, as soon as it came on, everybody ran to the floor. And I miss those days, right? But I'll never get them again. So we need to make sure we enjoy the time we do have and respect it and appreciate it. And because that was, I remember that music. You know how music takes you back, right? So it takes me back.
Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah, and it was just, it was a great time for me. And so, but anyway, that's it. That's all I have to say about that. That's where I get myself in trouble.
Great block, Ray. Great start of the block. Great start of the block.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, you know, we talked about in our interview about Philadelphia with Rodney Mansfield and, you know, us being from there. So I want to play some more music from Philadelphia. And also want to make sure I say happy birthday to who from Philadelphia? Who is that brother in Philadelphia that he just had a birthday? Great keyboardist. Come on, Don. You know this. You know it.
Oh, you put me on the spot, so I'm...
Yeah, I like when I put you on the spot.
You put me on, I put you on the spot. I get it. I totally
Dexter.
Get it.
Dexter.
But, that's the one, so.
Yes. Happy 72, and rocking and rolling and stuff. So, may God bless you, brother, and thank you for some great, great, great songs that you've written. Wow. And, we have him on the interview, too, so y'all got to go see. We tell you, get to our archives, you just never know who's in our archives. We have so many. We just had Jeffrey Osborne. We played an interview from him the other day. And I think, what was it? I mean, we it's just so many artists that we have on here that we've been really blessed to interview.
Just think about the archive. I mean, just think about all the other archive shows that we had with interviews from the artists. I mean, the list goes on. I mean, Rocky Robbins you know, Shirley Jones and Jelly Bean Johnson. I mean, come on, man. Really?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Denise Williams. Come on. Don't
I mean, Howard Hewitt and I mean, everyone. I mean, all of those from the from the Solar label.
Dynasty. All the people from Solar. Yeah, y'all got to check it out and stuff. So. I'm looking at beautiful, there was somebody I had on, in between Denise Williams, who did I just mention? Uh-oh, there goes the dogs doing their thing. They really need to get their own
show. Got something to say.
They got to get their own show, just like Greg said. All right, guys. So, but thank you again. Tomorrow on Solar Records Radio is Throwback Thursday, and we are going to throw it back, take you back down memory lane, and just have a good time. So make sure you tune in 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we'll have our triple threat as usual. Don Fleming comes on. I start off the with the afternoon drive, is what Don calls it, and then Don.
Yeah, I love it.
Don comes in with the evening show, you know, and that's beautiful at 8 p.m. Eastern. And then Goldie Mac closes us out with the late, late show. And so you guys tune in and hang out at Solar Records Radio on Thursday because it's a triple threat and we have a wonderful time keeping our brother legacy alive, Mr. Goldie Mac, as we lost him. But his shows are still here. So we're going to let him play.
Yes.
Anyway. All right, guys. So, God bless you and thank you again.
Did you tell the listener? I guess did you talk a little bit about the new season yet?
No, not today.
You're gonna hold that cat? The new shows, the new interviews, the video, the Zoom, and all of that stuff, man. You're gonna see. Going to see our faces, our pretty faces. So along with, of course, T-Mart. Yeah, we did a little test. I don't know if he told you guys, we did a little test run last week and, you know, myself, Wardell, and of course, T-Mart McCain. And we had even on there just talking and having a blast. It was just a great, experience to listen to them. And, you know, they talked about the room I was in, talking about how dark it was, and, you know.
Why is he so happy about that? I don't know.
it was so dark in the room.
he's in his man cave, so that
yeah,
that's
I was in my man cave with all of my toys. So you get to, you guys might get to see the toys and stuff.
Not just his toys, but his pizza and everything else. Yeah, you know, I got to have his food. I want Thai food, man. Come on, jeez. All right, so I got to perform tonight. What am I thinking? I was thinking I was going to a restaurant to get something to eat. I'm not going anywhere. I got to go to church. Get to church. All right, guys. So thank you so much. And we're going to sign out. We'll play a few more songs and it'll be done. But thanks again for hanging out with us today.
Today,
there goes Don.
Today, today.
Today.
7 p.m. Eastern Standard. I'm going to have a special interview today. I don't know if I'm going to call it Old School Monday. I might play a little music. It's going to be probably about a 15 to 30 minute interview. We're going to have a talk with former councilwoman of Los Angeles, Mrs. Jan Perry. She's running for Congress. So we're going to talk a little bit about her run and her platform and what people can do to donate and support her. If you know, you share the same values she shares and whatnot. It's going to be a great interview. I'm ready.
Tune in
7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time tonight. So check it out. Tonight, we're going to talk with former Councilwoman Jan Perry.
Awesome.
So we're going to,
chop it up, Don Fleming. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much again for hanging out with us and supporting Still Our Records Radio. We do what we do. If you guys want to, you know, be a part and help support our station, you could go to wardellpottsjr.com and go down to the app and click on it. And, man, somebody gave Donald Trump $6.1 billion. I thought it was $6.1 million. It's $6.1 billion. I said, "Are you kidding me?" So, wow. I mean, I think he has enough money already to pay for his defenses. That's just ridiculous. That's so much money. But anyway, we're not asking for anything near that much. That's okay. That's okay.
Don't get me started on Donald Trump, man.
I don't want to get you into it. All right. But anyway, we love you guys, and we thank you again for blessing us and being a part of Still Our Records Radio. See you later, Greg. Thanks again. Thanks a lot again for hanging out with us today and being a co-host here with us on Still Our Records Radio. And all you guys have a blessed rest of your day. And here we're going to leave you with Stanley Clark. And this is called School Days because school is back in. All right, guys. God bless. See you later, Don. Have a good show tonight, too. Have a good show. Dance.